Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Brute force. If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio. Special operations military news and straight talk with the guys in the community.
Hi, welcome back to a special edition of Soft Rep Radio. I am your host, Rad. Before I introduce my guest, I want to tell you guys to consistently check out our merch store, right? We really appreciate you going in, checking out the merch at softrep.com and also our book club. We've been getting a lot of new memberships in the book club, and I can only think that it's because I'm mentioning it. So we have softrep.com/book-club. Go check out the book club, see what Brandon Webb has been putting inside of that book club for you to enjoy, and check it out. And we also have a lot of things going on. If you sign up for our newsletters at softrep.com, there's some membership deals right now. So go check out softrep.com. Now, I have an author with me, as I usually have authors and the like. This is Dwayne Epstein, and he wrote The Dirty Dozen, the most iconic World War II film movie with Lee Marvin. And the reason why I kind of am like just thinking this through is because I really like Lee Marvin. And if you're my listener out there and you know who Lee Marvin is, white hair, think Chuck Norris and Delta Force, think the Dirty Dozen as the, he's the major, Major John Reisman, right? Isn't that right?
Reisman.
So Dwayne, you've written books, The Killing of Generals, you know, The Dirty Dozen, the best iconic movie. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rad. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we've been trying to get each other locked on for a few days now, and I'm super excited to have finally got this all streamed together.
So am I.
So let me just kind of say it correctly. So you wrote Killing Generals, The Making of the Dirty Dozen, the most iconic World War II movie of all time. Where do you get off saying it's the most iconic World War II movie? Tell me why.
Well, real quick answer. That was not my idea of a subtitle. That was my publisher. I didn't even know he was going to call it that. I kind of agree, not entirely agree. There are equally iconic movies. It's not the most. But the one thing we did agree on early on, the publisher and I, was in the title. I was thinking maybe calling it Men on a Mission, or I think he had suggested something like, oh, what's the line, Cassavetes? You don't know Victor Franco? You know, something like that. But that was not anything we talked about. That was something we talked about after we immediately both came up with Killing Generals. It was amazing. We said it at the same time in a phone conversation. And then he mentioned to me some of the other ideas he had had, but we both thought Killing Generals is perfect because it's one of the most famous lines in the movie. It's also the last line in the movie. And it also says in two words, volumes about what the theme of the movie is about. It's rather antisocial. It's anti-military. Some would say it's anti-war. I don't know if that's necessarily the case or not, but it's certainly, there are several major themes in the film. And one of them is that, you know, the film came out during the Vietnam War, which was growing more unpopular with every passing year. And by 67, which I write about in the book, we were in the heat of it, the midst of it. And people were starting to not want to be involved in the war anymore, wanted us to pull out. There were more and more protests and demonstrations. And so there are parallels to what the film is about, to what was going on in the country at the time. Director Robert Aldridge called it the perfect storm, in that we couldn't have planned to have this movie come out at the time things were societally going on. As it turned out, a lot of young people liked the film for that message, you know, draft age kids, and a lot of older people, the Greatest Generation. You know, the war had only ended 16 years before, and so they loved the movie because it was a lot of what they felt about and saw in real life. Even though they took a lot of, They took a lot of freedom with the storyline. You know, that would never happen in real life. You know, 12 convicts being trained for a suicide mission.
We do have the French Foreign Legion, though, huh? That does exist.
Oh, that, yeah, by definition. That's what they do.
You know what I mean?
Past, we just want you to fight for us. And it has happened, by the way, historically, but never in this country. We would never have that happen here. Matter of fact, it's going on right now in Russia. Mm-hmm. They opened up the Russian prisons and made, quote unquote, mercenaries. They're not mercenaries, they're prisoners, and trained them to fight against the Ukrainians. In fact, that guy that was shot was killed, killed in the airplane. The guy who trained them wound up being an enemy of Putin. And he was kind of, I think his name was Prigozhin. He was.
Yeah, he was. He was running that mercenary group, the Wagner group.
Yeah, the Wagner, right.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right.
He was kind of like John Reisman, but a lot less ethical, for lack of a better way to put it. And by the way, during World War II, the Nazis had done it themselves. I wish I could remember the country. One of the Eastern European countries, I write about it in the book, that had opened up the prisons to fight the partisans I think it was Romania, I'm not sure. And it was done by a German officer who had been convicted for, had a prison record himself. He had been a child molester. And they don't seem to really care, the Nazis. They'll do whatever.
Anyway. Right. Right. Well, look there at it. Exactly. So yeah. Lee Marvin, right? That's what we're really celebrating here, is him as a United States Marine Corps veteran who fought during World War II, kind of had a call to service again as an actor to almost like, you know, help the effort, put it out there. And so he's like, hey, I'm going to do a movie and we're going to show these guys give their last breath of possible air to America still. They may have done these heinous crimes that they're accused of, like Charles Bronson and there were some others in there. Holy cow, there's so many people in that. It won like 4 Academy Awards and it wasn't even supposed to win an Academy Award.
Well, it only won one, but it was nominated for 4.
Oh, excuse me.
No, that's okay. And when I did my Lee Marvin book, Lee Marvin Point Blank, I got to interview a lot of great people who knew Lee really well, including his son, who has since passed away. But Christopher Marvin told me his father made a lot of military theme or war films. And Christopher said, I know why my father made those movies. He made them for the guys who didn't come back, that it was a matter of making a statement. And, you know, Lee Marvin never really made like I'm not putting him down per se, but he never made a kind of a John Wayne war movie, if you understand what that means.
Sure.
The way I'm phrasing it. He never made a real gung-ho, let's go get them, guys, let's get that hill, blah, blah, blah. There was always a much greater subtext to any time he wore a uniform in a film. And it was often about how, you know, I'll give you an example. there's a rumor that still exists about how what Lee Marvin felt about The Dirty Dozen. A lot of people think he did it just for the money, and it was a popcorn film, and he didn't really like it because he didn't believe it. That's just not true. I don't know how that got started, but it's an historical misinformation. In interview upon interview after the film came out, he didn't have to say this, but in interview upon interview, he would always say, I like this movie, and the reason I like it is because it doesn't necessarily tell the truth. It's not very believable as a premise. But what the movie has to say about war, I believe in it, and I like it. John Wayne was first offered the lead, and he turned it down. And I love this story. He sent a memo to the producer, Ken Hyman, whom I interviewed, by the way. He's still alive. And John Wayne wrote in the memo, whoever wrote this piece of crap script, okay, is probably some sandal-wearing, long-haired hippie freak carrying a sign that says he doesn't want to fight in a war, that he really should be fighting himself. Okay, here's the thing. The script was written by a 66-year-old screenwriting Oscar-winning veteran, Nunnally Johnson. Now, yeah, when they offered it to Lee Marvin, he said yes right away. It's often been said, too, that one of the things John Wayne didn't like about it was the innocent killing of some of the people at the end of the film. You know, the Nazis, yes, but also they were there with their concubines, women, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's open to question exactly how innocent a woman is who hangs out with a Nazi. But that's another subject.
Guilty by association, dude. I mean, it happens all the time. You know, we took out a whole wedding in a Yemen just for one guy.
Right. Lee Marvin didn't have a problem with that. Lee Marvin actually said, look, war is hell. And let's be honest with each other. You know, innocent people die in war all the time. And he cited the bombing of Dresden, Hiroshima, Nagasaki. A lot of innocent people died. That happens in war. And that's one of the points in the film. Matter of fact, the way they die at the end was really kind of parallel. And Robert Aldridge did this on purpose to, you know, the blowing up of the chateau at the end of the film. He considered it parallel to the use of napalm in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And as well as the ovens during World War II and the concentration camps. It wasn't an accident, and it wasn't, did they mean this or did they mean that? It was clear what they meant. It was very symbolic. And like I said, Lee Marvin didn't have a problem with that, and he liked it. He also loved playing the character of John Reisman.
Yeah, he held it pretty well. You know, you'd see him walking in the courtyard as he's like, you know, looking at his Dirty Dozen, you know, and he just kind of walked with a nice walk, and he really held it well. I enjoyed that movie. I grew up with it. I was born in the 70s. You know, I'm 46. So it's been around. You know, a lot of Lee Marvin has been in my life. I didn't realize it until looking up Lee Marvin, really, how much more Lee Marvin there was, and all the Delta Forces, right? You do know what?
The first one.
Well, he was like the main guy. He's like the guy that put them all there. He's like, I need you all to do this, Chuck Norris. You need to go on this mission. Point blank, yeah. Huh? You talk about that.
Yeah, that was a book that took me 20 years to get published. And in the 20 years, I did a lot of research. The 20 years were a little kind of off and on because in between, both my parents got ill and I had to take care of them a little bit until they passed away. And two people are most responsible for me being able to get that published. One was my agent, wonderful, wonderful human being who passed away a few years back, named Mike Hamelberg. Mike Hamelberg believed in this project more than anybody other than myself. And he finally found a publisher, a gentleman by the name of Tim Schaffner of Schaffner Press out of Tucson, Arizona. And we had gotten rejections from pretty much every publisher there is. Now, this is just real quick aside. When the book came out and it became an ebook, it made number 4 on the New York Times bestsellers list. Rare thing for a film biography of a gentleman who had been gone since 1987. And because we had gotten turned down by everybody, Tim had gone to a conference of other independent publishers, and they all came up to him and went, wow, great job with the Lee Marvin book. Boy, I wish we would have published it. To which, you know, I could say, you had your chance, man. You blew it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
A little, you know, pat on the back there. And it did well. And I'm very proud of it. And it also won a couple of publishing awards, too. But I came to Killing Generals via my new agent, a gentleman by the name of Lee Sobel, who is as go-getter as you can get, man. You talk about a hustler. He's amazing. He contacted me asking me if I need an agent. And I said, yeah, but, you know, agents don't contact writers. Writers look for agents. And he said, right. Yeah. He goes, why are writers so cynical? We can work this out. So we started talking. Well, first I checked him out to make sure he was legit, and he was. Right. And then we started talking about a project, and he asked me, well, he said to me, I loved your Lee Marvin book. How would you like to write a book about one of Lee Marvin's films? I said, yeah, that would be great. And he suggested Point Blank, the John Borman film, which is what I subtitled my bio on. And I told him, you know what? I like that movie. I don't love it. You want to know my favorite Lee Marvin movie? That would be The Dirty Dozen. I've always loved that movie ever since I was a kid. And he said, tell you what, put together a proposal. I'll shop it around and we'll see what we can do. And I did, and he did, and it worked.
That's amazing.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
You know, for a writer out there, you know, you just, I want them to hear that you just kept to it. You didn't stop. You said this is a 20 year in the making. So by the time you had put this all together in the beginning, you know, 20 years had gone by, you were still trying to get it published, right?
Right. I came close a few times. There was a lady at Penguin, one of the editors there, who really, really wanted to do it. But you see, I don't know if most people know how these things are done, but they're done by conference. You know, once a week or once a month, everybody in the editorial staff get together and they pitch ideas, throw out ideas, and they have to have a majority vote in order to get the okay to go with it. She didn't get it. And she was very frustrated. I was working another job. I was at a day job I was the managing editor at a publisher for children's books, believe it or not. Anyway, she would contact me periodically when I was there, and she would say, if I don't get this book published, I'm going to cut my throat. And I said, Hillary, don't do that.
That doesn't
help anybody. And just keep plugging. And ultimately, it was a Penguin, I believe. They turned it down. And Mike Hamelberg knew that because he was the one who got her in touch with me. And Mike just said, keep plugging. We can do this. We just can't give up. And I didn't. And don't get me wrong. There were indeed times where I came close, where I was like, why am I spinning my wheels? Why am I wasting my time? I could be doing something else with my life. But Mike didn't give up and I didn't give up, and it came to pass. Funny thing is, there was a period there, like I said, when my parents were ill, where I didn't have any contact with Mike anymore. I mean, for a while, like 5-6 years, I think. And then when I got back in contact with him, first of all, I didn't even know if he was still alive.
Things are changing.
I'm sorry?
I said, yeah. Things change, you know?
Absolutely. And when I got back in contact with him, I said, are you still running your agency? And he went, oh, yeah, I'll never quit. I'm semi-retired. I'm not taking on any more new clients. But and then he goes, what do you got? And I said, let me revamp the Lee Marvin book, and you tell me what your proposal, and you tell me what you think. And he said, do it. And I did. And he liked it even more because in the interim, I was able to find out a lot more information. So sure. We got
to really just crack that egg open on Lee Marvin and just get more. And then you could just, you know, just edit your book and just make it even more, you know, Lee Marvin.
Right. He had said, too, one of the ways he encouraged me, I love this. He said, because publishers were saying, you know, he's been gone too long. People don't remember him. Who cares about Lee Marvin? And Hamelberg said, look, you just keep plugging at this. I guarantee you, the Marvin fans are going to come up behind the curtain once they know this exists because they're there. And excuse me, he was right. He was absolutely right.
Oh, it's true. And I know my listener and the folks on Soft Rep know Lee Marvin. And if they haven't, they need to know Lee Marvin. Just like a new pop singer will do another rendition of a classic song. And old timers get upset at that new guy breaking it out, right?
Well, but how dare they?
How dare he redo somebody else's song, but yet he's now just exposed that artist through his rendition to his fans.
Absolutely right. Absolutely
right. And so I have to just say, you know, again, Lee Marvin, right? Let's talk about Lee Marvin, Marine Corps, right? Mm-hmm. United States Marines. Yep. He would be 100 years old. So we're filming this in February, you and me, and I usually post it up about a week or two later. So it'll be his 100th birthday, right? February 19th.
I actually like to say, you know, President's Day is an important day in our history and calendar, but it's every year. A Lee Marvin centennial, once, and that's it. So, yes. And that's when you got to celebrate. And it is on Monday, February 19th, because he was born February 19th, 1924. And I'd love to see him more in the media for that and you know, have more conversations about his films, about his work, about his life, mostly his legacy,
correct,
which would be, you know, his films.
Exactly. And like you said, he wanted to leave something of himself, you know, and also for his buddies or those that didn't make it back. I really like that sentiment that, you know, he would put into his acting. But okay. I loved him, and I owned this movie growing up. I'd watch it all the time. Was Cat Ballou, right? Where he is this just like Sixth Sense shooter cowboy. He just needs to sober up.
Right. And he also, you know, he played that character. Yes, it was a comedy, and he won the Oscar for it, by the way, which is extremely rare for comedy performances to win an Oscar. But he played that character with a sense of poignancy. He has several speeches in that movie where it's kind of like, what do you do with a burnt out gunfighter? Yeah. And Marvin had commented that he thought of him as like an old boxer. What do you do with a boxer who's past his prime and burnt out? Do you give him one more shot? Maybe let him kill himself in the process? Or what? I mean, what transpires for him? And
There's
a wonderful story. I got to interview the late director, Elliot Silverstein, who directed the movie. He said one of the first scenes we shot was the scene where he has this really long speech where in the speech, he's, you know, he's drinking from a flask and he keeps getting drunker and drunker until I think it's Michael Callan's character who says, I've never seen a man get through a day so fast because he's just getting drunker and drunker until he's falling down.
Sure.
But in the scene, he talks about what it's like to be an old gunfighter. And they had to shoot it 7 times before they got it right. And it was the first thing they did. And Marvin, of course, was nervous. And Elliot Silverstein kept coming up to Lee and he goes, try it this way, try it that way. And the producer of the movie was on the set, a guy named Harold Hecht. And he was ready to fire Marvin on the spot because he didn't like what he was seeing. And so on the 8th take, Elliot Silverstein walked up to Lee and he went, look, I know you can make me laugh. You're making me laugh. That's fine. I want you to make me cry. See if you can do this where it's just so poignant you feel for this guy. And he said, Elliot Silverstein had been a director on a TV show called Naked City. And a lot of the characters in Naked City, you know, it's all about New York and people who are wanted by the cops for a crime or this. And they're all kind of desperate and downtrodden. And he goes, think of it as a Naked City character, but you're in the Old West. Mm-hmm. And Lee Marvin, being Lee Marvin, would go, gotcha, buddy. Right on. And then he did the scene. And he goes, and Elliot Silverstein said, I named my yacht Take 8 because we got it. We nailed it on the 8th take. Mm. So I thought that was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. You know, Lee Marvin has the eyes that can just squint and just look in the camera. And, you know, when you watch him in that movie, he seems like a dirty, drunk cowboy. Right. He just seems like he smells. And, you know, you're just like, you know, they're dragging him along and just like,
you know,
he's dragging his boot in the dirt.
He, you know, the thing about his eyes, that famous scene, that sight gag of him and the horse drunk leaning against the wall. And one of the characters comes up to him, the Indian, and says, "Kid, look at your eyes." And Lee Marvin goes, "What's wrong with my eyes?" And the kid goes, "They're all red." And Lee Marvin goes, "You ought to see him from my side."
Yeah. Yeah. Because he's looking out of him, man.
Yeah, right. He was great.
Yeah, he was. He was. He was. R.I.P. to Lee Marvin, you know, and the legacy that he'll leave. And we're going to capture that here on Soft Rep. And as long as this website gets its bills paid, it'll stay out there as long as the internet can hold it, I'm sure. So that's more, you know, of us talking about Lee Marvin and, you know, his legacy and his kin. You know, like just recently I saw that John Wayne's grandson is in The Mandalorian and he's the way, it's the way he walks. So The Mandalorian is John Wayne's grandson dressed up with Pedro as the voice. Okay. So there's three people that play the Mandalorian in this movie, right? So, I mean, John Wayne's family's out there still doing stuff. I'm sure cool. Lee Marvin's got lineage out there. Did he have grandkids and kids like that? Like
he had four children, two of which are still alive. And the one I spoke to the most was his son, Christopher. Christopher became a drummer. He played on Tom Waits' album, Mule Variations, and a few other things. And he had three daughters. Now, one of his daughters, his oldest daughter, Courtney, was a film editor. She worked on that god-awful Kevin Costner, Waterworld.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was one of the main cutters on that. And his other daughter, oh, gosh darn it. They all have C names. Not Cynthia. She was the baby. She passed away. Not Courtney. It'll come to me. Anyway, she is a wardrobe dresser for TV and movies. So they're kind of in a roundabout way. Got in the industry somewhat.
Yeah, they're still working in Hollywood, still doing working in film and television and
right.
theater. Yeah.
Now, as far as grandchildren goes, it kind of works like this. Lee was married twice, and he had that infamous relationship resulting in the Palimony case with Michelle Triola, but they never married and they never had children. But Pam Feely, Lee's last wife, his widow, she had a bunch of children from previous marriages, and several of them are still to this day trying to break into the business. Well, not her children, her grandchildren
sure.
are trying to break into the business. One of them is, I think, trying to be a stuntman. I think his name is Joe King. I'm not sure. But in any event, and Marvin did have a grandson. His name is Edward Michael or something like that. His daughter, once again, whose name I don't remember, she had a son. And I think he's in his 30s now. I don't know.
I met him a few times.
I asked him if he remembers his grandfather. And he said, yeah, one time he told me to get my feet out of the pool. That's all I remember.
Get your feet out of the pool, kid. Yeah. There's an alligator in there.
or
he's just trying to warn him.
Out of the pool.
Let's see. Claudia, Courtney, and Cynthia.
That's it. Thank you. Claudia was the one who died.
Okay.
Cynthia, that's the one. She's the one who works in the wardrobe department of different studios. Courtney was the one who was an editor. I don't know if she still is anymore. I haven't had
Courtney Lee. Yeah, it says here, Marvin married Betty Ebling in April of 1952, and together they had four children, a son, Christopher Lamont, and three daughters, Courtney Lee, Cynthia Louise, and Claudia Leslie. Well, shout out to your father, all right, if you guys happen to stumble on this podcast and you're still around, so shout out to your father. We're keeping him going. All right. Yep. Rock and roll.
Did you notice story. That the way they were named, first name with a C, last name with an L?
Oh yeah, huh, they did. Yeah,
yeah. I got to know Betty Marvin very well. She was a wonderful person. She passed
away. Well, they gave Courtney his middle name is his right. first name, Lee. Yeah, they right. gave that, which is actually my middle name.
They gave Christopher Lee's Christopher's middle name is Lee's father's first name, Lamont Marvin.
Okay, so Lamont is Lee's original, is his first name?
No, Lee's father's first name
is Lamont. Oh, I see. Right. I see. So they kind of kept that whole family in there. I got you.
Right. I asked Betty about the names, and she said it was ridiculous. It was like we were naming orangutans. She was a trippy chick. She said such great things to me.
I named all my kids after bridges. We named my daughter Brooklyn, and then we named my daughter Sydney, and then cool. We tried to think of Alexander, but we just went with he made the Silk Road. So that's a bridge between economies.
There you go. That's cool. I always liked what that thing Ron Howard did with his kids. He named all of his kids in the hotels they were conceived in.
He has a Marriott and like
I don't know if it's Marriott, but I know his daughter, who's an actress, Bryce Howard, there was a Bryce Hotel. And there you go.
OMG. Ron Howard. I'm doing this. I'm looking it up right now. Ron Howard, who played Opie on Andy Griffith and is a huge director nowadays. Mm-hmm. He did Dr. Seuss.
Richie Cunningham on Happy Days.
Bryce. So Paige and Reese. We'll have to find out. Yeah, he does have a Bryce Dallas, though. That is funny enough. Wow, his kids are my age.
It's just something I thought about.
Yeah.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Getting back to Lee Marvin.
Yeah.
As you know, or may not know, I'm assuming you do or not, doesn't matter. That
I know everything.
I'm sorry?
I said I know everything.
It takes all the mystery out of life, doesn't it?
Yeah.
He was in the Marines, and he did 21 landings during the Marines island hopping campaign in the Pacific. And he saw some things, and he did some things that were pretty horrific that stayed with him the rest of his life. I didn't say it in specifics because I didn't know for sure, but when I was working on the book, it seemed to me he suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder. And I hinted at it when I wrote at it, and I didn't find out specifically until I talked to a friend of his, a lifelong friend of his, who said almost definitely he had PTSD. You could see it, and he knew he had it, but he didn't find out until the end of his life. I would find out in talking to all the people he knew that he was close to. I found out if there were 10 symptoms of PTSD, he had 8 of them. But in truth, he had all 10. Alcoholism, screaming nightmares, an attraction to violence, loud noises would make him jump 10 feet in the air, you know, things like that. Those are the only ones I can think of off the top of my head. But his wife, his first wife, his brother, his son, they all told me that he had screaming nightmares when he came back from the war. And that's...
It even quotes you, honestly. I just Googled. Here's what I did. I just looked up Lee Marvin, USMC PTSD. And it says a World War II veteran and former Marine, Marvin was in some of the bloodiest battles of the Pacific theater. He suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder most of his life. Epstein says they had to slug through jungles for days just to gain yardage, and he was wounded on Saipan. That's right. This is just this is the first thing that pops up when you type that in for Lee Marvin. So yeah, for sure, if he's in all these bloody battles, he's gonna have just, you know, he's gonna see it all.
I don't know how strong a stomach your audience has, but
strong. This is weak. It's weak. Their stomach is weak. Let's hear it.
Okay. Great. Let's be good and sadistic. He used to tell this story to test people about whether they can handle anything he tells them in terms of his experience. And it was shortly after he landed on, I think it was either Eniwetok or Kwajalein, one of the Japanese islands, Japanese-held islands, that, and it was early on, I think it was like 1943, and he joined in late 42. Anyway, they trained real quick so they could get sent overseas. He was in the Fighting 4th, the 4th Marine Division. And once they landed, he saw a pregnant woman, a Japanese pregnant woman with a dead baby in her arms, and she was crying, okay? And one of the Marines in his outfit stepped up and said, "Drop that baby." She was crying, and she said, you know, and I don't even know if she understood what he was saying.
Right.
And she just kept crying and shaking her head, and he asked her one more time. She refused. He took his knife out, cut her belly open, disemboweled her. The fetus fell out. Put the knife back. And as Lee Marvin would tell people, it was at that moment he realized what war was. He said, "It wasn't anything like I ever thought it would be." Now, granted, that might have been considered a war crime, and it probably is, but it happens all the time in any given situation.
Dude. It's, you know, I talk to a lot of folks, right, that have gone through a lot of the rigmaroles of war and combat, and they all have some type of a kind of like a hollow voice stare when they're talking about certain things. And, you know, you just kind of let it go, you know, let them talk. And then at the end of it, I'm like, "You're home, Johnny."
Right.
"You're home. It's okay. Yeah. Welcome back, you know, welcome back from Nam." And he's like, "But I went to Afghanistan."
Yeah,
it's like, "Right? Yeah, I know, bro. Welcome home."
Right.
You know? Oh, wow. Yeah. See, I do war games, and I'm sure you're totally aware of that, but I do large scale war games as like as a commander of a unit and everything like that. We have guys with night vision, and we go out to the West Deserts of Utah, and we get together and we fight each other till from like 10 in the morning till about 2 in the morning. So we go into the night and we go late into the night. And I had a friend of mine come home from Afghanistan. And the first thing he did was he came straight off the plane. He got a ride out to the desert, right to where we were. And he got dropped off by whoever. And he's like, "Hey, I'm back." We're like, "Yes." Everyone put their plate carrier on him and gave him an extra rifle and gave him his night vision. As soon as they put that night vision on him, and he had just gotten home and he's now not in Afghanistan. As soon as they put that night vision on and we started moving out, he just had to sit down. Mm. He's like, "I can't do this." And he kind of just melted right there. And, wow. You know, he had just been wearing night vision and just doing all of that. And what he thought he was missing out on here, he had already... It was just too much too soon. And so I can only imagine, you know, somebody who has been through 21 of the bloodiest battles of island hopping along Japan and Saipan and all these different places as a young Marine.
The thing is, what you just described that gentleman went through is very typical. He just gets off the plane and he wants to go back into a war game. And then he freezes. That paradox, that irony is, did you ever see the movie The Hurt Locker?
Yes.
Yeah. Kind of like that. He's lucky to get back from the war and he's standing in a grocery store and he can't focus and he can't concentrate. He can't think of anything except being there, and he goes back.
Right. Right.
That's PTSD.
Actually. The whole time you're like, "I want to go home. I want to go home and start my motel on a river that's in this forest area." And then it's been mowed down and turned into a mall. And then you're like, "I'm going to go back to the Marines or the military because they'll take care of me." And it's just like, you know, the transition that our troops have to do. What Lee Marvin did was transition successfully from civilian. I think a boxer. Didn't he box too as a young man? He is like,
no,
he wasn't boxed.
No, he didn't.
No, not a boxer.
No, he played a boxer on TV. It sounds like a line from a movie. I'm not.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Maybe that's that's what I'm thinking. So what I'm getting at is, he started as a young man, went to the Marine Corps, and got out, and had to transition into something that a lot of my listeners who are veterans, they always say, "What's next for me after I get out of the military?" Well, this dude became an actor, right?
Yeah. Well, what happened with Lee was, when he came back, his parents lived in upstate New York. They lived in Woodstock, and the same place before the concert, right? They lived in Woodstock, and there was a kind of a little artist colony in Woodstock. There always had been. And when he got back, his father knew some people in town. He was fairly well known, and he got him a job as a plumber's assistant. And that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to be a plumber. He said it was the best thing he could do at the time. It was therapeutic. It made him not have to think about things, and it was good exercise for his back, he said. And then this is a great story about, there are like three or four different versions of this story about how he became an actor. The one that was the true story is probably the best. And I won't even tell you the story he made up. This is the real story. He became really good friends with a guy named Ian Ballantyne, who would later go on to create Ballantyne Books. And Ian Ballantyne's wife was Betty Ballantyne. And they were having a party at Ian Ballantyne's parents' house for his birthday. Now, Ian Ballantyne's father was a gentleman, Teddy Ballantyne, and he ran or co-ran this place called the Maverick Theater in Woodstock, New York. Now, for such a small community, there are actually three or four live theaters there, which is kind of interesting. But that night at the party, everybody's getting swacked. That was the word that Lee used. And there was an actor in a play they were about to do. The play was called Roadside, which would later become musicalized as Oklahoma. Anyway, so the actor that was supposed to play this character called Texas was sick. And Teddy Ballantyne shouted from across the room, "Hey, Lee, we need a loudmouth drunk. Can you play a loudmouth on stage?" Lee was drunk. He said yes. Now, the next morning, he was hungover. I mean, like really hungover. And he was kind of like, "Oi, what did I do? Oh, my God." So Betty Ballantyne, and she was the one of the people who told me the story. Betty Ballantyne said, "I stayed up with him all day, you know, sobering him up, learning the lines." And she goes, "But in truth, he never really learned the lines. How could he? He had one day." So what happened was, when he made his entrance, and I love this story, back east they have dry storms where, you know, I don't know, St. Elmo's fire or whatever, and there's lightning and thunder, but there's no rain. When he made his entrance, all 6 foot, 2.5 inches of him in those big boots, cowboy hat, and gun belt, there was a thunder crack when he came out on stage with that presence of his. And he was like, "That's it. I know what I'm doing with the rest of my life. There's no holding me back. I want to be an actor." And he joined the American Theater Wing, which was an organization that was created under the GI Bill for returning vets in order to learn to be an actor. And the interesting thing is, they didn't do like Stanislavski or the Royal Academy or anything like that. What they did was they taught these guys how to get jobs, how to do an audition, how to
audition skills. Yes, audition and cold reads and how to audition against themselves. And yes,
which is an art in and of itself. Now, the funny 100%. Thing is, he didn't tell his father he was going to do that. His father thought he was going to apply to the GI Bill as a bricklayer. Be trained as a bricklayer. But what he did was, he used the money from the GI Bill to get into the American Theater Wing.
That's smart.
And it worked. And his
Why
father,
not?
His father was very pissed off at him. But, and it's interesting, Robert, his brother, told me that when Monty Lamont Marvin found out that Lee was going to be an actor, he hit the roof. And Robert told me, he goes, "My father said to him, don't ever expect any help from me. You're on your own. You know, if you're going to do this crazy thing, no help from me." Well, apparently, I found Lee Marvin's checkbook from that time. Oh, I stayed at the Marvin home because that's where Robert was living. And I was there for about 2 weeks. And I was able to find all kinds of great stuff. And I found Lee Marvin's checkbook and his father's checkbook. And apparently, his father lent him money for a winter coat. He paid his phone bill 1 month. He, you know, he's a dad. That's what
exactly.
Dads do, no matter
exactly.
what they say, you know,
you got to believe in your kid who went to World War II, bro.
Right. By the way, so did Monty Marvin. He was in World War One and he was in World War Two. He was in both. He was a lieutenant in World War One, and in World War Two, he resigned his commission and was just like, you know, a death sergeant. But he did it. Yeah. His brother Robert was also in World War Two. He was in the Army Air Force. He was in the ground. What the hell is the word? He's the guy with the lights who go like this, you know, when the planes are coming in.
Sure. Yeah. Like a runway guy on the tarmac that
the ground crew.
Brought it. Yeah. Ground crew. Sure.
Yeah. So they were all in it. All of them.
His dad was in World War One and World War Two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cause they were like not that far apart, like 17, 20, let's see, 1918 to 1930. Yeah. Seriously.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Marvin had a very complicated relationship with his father. He loved his father dearly, but he was always disappointing his father. And at the same time, Monty was a very cold and somewhat unemotional man. And Lee used to tell the story about his father. He said, I know a lot of people think that my father was unemotional, but when he was in World War One, he was in command of a cavalry platoon, you know, horses and all that. And he said, when they got hit with mustard gas, he said, they had gas masks on, but they didn't have it for the horses. And he said, and when he saw all those horses' bodies getting twisted and mangled, he goes, he cried just in retelling it. And he goes, he can be emotional depending on what it was about. So it's kind of interesting.
You know, I always cry when the horse gets killed and not the cowboy too.
Right.
You know, in a movie. I'm like, what? Not the horse. Not the horse.
I remember one time, and this is one of the reasons why I was always proud of my mother. Do you remember the movie Sounder? Paul Winfield, Cicely Tyson. Great movie.
Okay.
It's about a black sharecropping family in the 1930s. And we saw the movie in the theater. I was like 10 or 11 years old. And we saw the movie in the theater. And there's a scene in the movie when the father, played by Paul Winfield, the family is so desperate for food. They're barely making any money. He breaks into a local market and steals some food. Okay? So the cops come and get him. And they're carrying him away. And everybody in the family is in tears. It's like, don't take daddy. Right? Understandably, right? And as they're taking him away, their dog, the title of the movie, Sounder, gets shot. Sounder gets shot chasing Paul Winfield. And when that happened in the theater, everybody's like, oh, no, not the dog. My mother turned around to the whole theater and went, the hell's the matter with you people? He's going to jail and you're crying for the stupid dog? I just thought, my way to go.
Oh, that's like old Yeller.
Yes.
You just don't want it to happen.
No, right, exactly. But I like that my mother's sentiment was in the right place.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Hey, you know, in your book, you know, The Dirty Dozen, the best World War II iconic film, you have like a special thanks page in there, right? There's a Barbara.
A special what?
It says special thanks. Yeah. So let me speak up just a little bit for you, my friend. It says, like, you know, to my friend, maybe Barbara, you know why? Do you want to explain why?
Sure. What I wrote was this. Okay, where is it? Yeah. For Mike, he knows why. And to Barbara, she knows why. Okay. Barbara is my girlfriend.
Oh.
And she's right across the apartment now. And I love her. She's the love of my life. No shit. We've been together over almost 25 years. Now, the interesting part is Mike. Okay. My landlord's name is Mike Peterson. And he read the book and he went, "Hey, man, thanks for naming, for dedicating the book to me." And I was like, "It's not dedicated to you, you moron. What's the matter with you? Why would I dedicate it to my landlord?" Okay. One of my best friends growing up was a guy named Mike Barrow. Now, Mike Barrow and I used to watch The Dirty Dozen constantly. Every single time it was on TV, when they used to show it in two parts, we'd watch it together. When it first came out on VHS, I got it first. He got it later, but because I got it first, if there was nothing going on, this is when we were in our teens and 20s, if there was nothing going on in our lives, he would call me up and say, "You got anything going on tonight?" And I said, "No." And he would go, "You want to watch The Dirty Dozen?" I said, "Yeah." And it got to the point, I'm not making this up, it got to the point, I reminded him of this late recently, because we're still friends. He'd call me up, and it was before caller ID, so I hear the phone ring, I pick it up, and he would go, and I would go, "Okay, come on over and watch it."
The theme song.
That's all he had to do. So that's why it's dedicated to Mike.
I love that. I love that. Thanks for
going to do that either, which was really cool. He was blown away.
That's the best thing, you know. That's so awesome. I'll tell you, I have a similar kind of blowing my friends away kind of nice thing is, I have a warehouse outside of Hill Air Force Base where I run indoor war games, and they got these big windows on them. And me and my business partner were like, "Well, let's just put our homies up that we play war games with on the windows, like show it's a community environment." And so we went and got all these pictures that I had taken over the years. And I was like, "Which one am I going to put?" And we put them up on the windows, and the guys never knew it. And they showed up to see the shop, and they saw themselves on the windows.
Nice.
And they're like, yeah, they're all like standing like Captain Morgan's, like pointing at themselves on the window, you know, with their like, "That's me, you know, take a picture." Morgan, I like that. And, you know, it's the simple things that make us love one another in a relationship, right? It's the small things, dude.
That's right.
It's the littlest things, absolutely, the memories.
And that's usually what's so funny. That's usually what you remember most. You don't remember, well, you know, I remember friends' weddings and stuff like that. But for the most part, it's those little moments in life that take precedence, you know? That's what you're always remember. Yeah, I do. Mike and I have a lot of matter of fact, there's a group of us. I don't know why I'm telling you this, but I'm going to tell it anyway. We call ourselves the Movieland Rat Pack because when we were teenagers, me, Mike, Brett, and Greg, the four of us, we all worked at Movieland Wax Museum in Buena Park. And we bonded. We bonded really tight, and we still are friends today. And once a year, we haven't done it in a while, but once a year, we used to have what we called the Movieland Rat Pack Summit, where we would all meet somewhere for the longest time. It always wound up being Vegas, you know?
Sure, of course. Everything's in Vegas. Let's just go to Vegas.
We had gone to San Diego. We had gone to San Francisco. And when we couldn't think of where to go back to one of them again or whatever, it was Vegas.
Vegas.
It was Vegas. And we had a ball. We had so much. One time when the Sands was about to close, when they were about to demolish it, the Sands Hotel, we went there. And we decided, because every year we would do something weird and wacky. And we decided this year, we're all going to rent tuxedos. And we're going to walk around Vegas in tuxes and try to look cool. And we did. And we went to the Sands. And the act that was on stage, it was one of the last times, was Alan and Rossi. Remember Alan and Rossi from the old Ed Sullivan show?
Yes, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, it was Steve Rossi and Marty Allen. You know, Marty Allen with the big wild hair. "Hello there." And we came in, we got in a little late. Marty Allen couldn't help but notice us. And he sees us and he goes, "Look, it's the White Mills brothers." And which was actually kind of funny. And here's the best. We, after the show, we got to go backstage to the dressing rooms of the old Sands. And I asked, I said, is this where Sinatra stayed before he came on stage? And Marty Allen said, yeah. And I looked and I went, I'll bet you Dean Martin threw up in that toilet.
I bet Sammy Davis put in his eyeball on that couch.
Right in the mirror.
Right there. You got it, baby. Oh, yeah, baby.
And then when the show was over, we're going back to our room. And in the parking lot, out comes Marty Allen. We kind of crossed paths. And he remembered us. He talked to us a little bit. Somewhere, I'm not going to look for it. But anyway, he tells us a joke. And he goes, let me ask you boys a question. Who's a really hot sex symbol right now? And we thought for a minute. At that time, we said Pam Anderson. And he went, okay, guy's on a desert island all by himself. Been there for years. Then a giant wave washes over. And on the wave is Pam Anderson. And she lands right on the island. Okay. And as luck would have it, she was doing Baywatch at the time. But anyway, she goes.
Exactly.
Yeah. And Pam Anderson tells the guy, thank you for saving my life. Is there anything I can do for you? And the guy says, yeah, what do you think? And so after about the fourth or fifth time, she goes, wow, that was incredible. That's the best sex I ever had. Anything I can do for you? And the guy says, yeah, do me a favor. Put on this hat and coat. man's trench coat and a fedora. She puts it on, and the guy looks around, and he goes like this. He puts his arm around Pam Anderson and goes, did you know I'm stooping Pam Anderson?
To this guy, he wanted to let this guy know, hey pal, guess what?
When Marty Allen told us that joke, we all fell apart, and then he just walked away. It was so cool. It was like, you know, Batman or something.
That guy, yeah, he just had it up here, that Rolodex of those jokes.
Oh, you betcha. You betcha. Anyway.
Well, no, that's great. No, I love that. And the fact that you were like, did Dean Martin throw up in that bucket or in that toilet? Right. I bet he did.
this is so stupid. We actually took a vote about who was who. My buddy Brett, because he was the shortest, was Sammy Davis Jr. My buddy Mike, because we always thought he was so cool, he was Dean Martin. And my buddy Greg Fry, who was very fastidious, very cognizant of how he dresses and whatnot, he was Peter Lawford. And I was Frank Sinatra.
Of course.
I got Frank. We actually took
a vote. I want to be Johnny Carson. Well.
Or what's the joke? Last one in the room is Joey Bishop. Oh,
yeah. Well, that's the show tonight, Ed.
Son of a gun.
Well, listen, I've had you for almost an hour of your time talking Lee Marvin, talking about his lineage, talking about the book that you wrote as an author, as a respected author. You can find Killing Generals, The Making of the Dirty Dozen, the most iconic World War II movie of all time, written by my new friend, Dwayne Epstein. It's out everywhere, right? We can find this on the internet, at bookstores.
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever fine books are sold. And this is still very much in print and still selling.
Lee Marvin's Point Blank, Dwayne Epstein. Yeah, we will put that in the description of this episode. So when people are looking at softrep.com, they can just read about what we kind of talked about and click on it and possibly go find your book. So, you know, let's make sure that Anton, my producer, gets a link from your bio so we can share that, because we would love to put that out there and probably in the book club.
And I will. Yes. Hey, that last part again. I'm sorry.
We could try to get it in the book club.
Oh, that would be terrific. Thank you. And if you need to, I can email you the Amazon link for both books.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect. And we'll just give it to Anton and the guys, and they'll just go ahead and do a dissertation, and they'll put that all linkage in there. So
right on.
Really, I just want to say thank you for the working through all the technical difficulties these last 2-3 days get together. And it's really been worth it.
Yeah, and thank my neighbor, Shannon. She's a sweetheart.
Oh, Shannon, you're a sweetheart, huh? Hey, no problem. Thanks, Shannon. We appreciate you.
Absolutely. Oh, and if you want
to. And Barbara. We appreciate Barbara. Yes.
And if you want to cut out that Movie Land Rat Pack stuff, that's fine by me. I don't have a problem.
Oh, we're not even done yet, brother. Nothing's getting cut. No, we're still going strong, bro. You go ahead. Keep telling Bishop Rad what else you want to confess. Go ahead.
Of course,
go ahead.
If you want to leave it in, I could certainly send it to them. And they could see.
Oh, yeah. No. Oh, please. We will. Yes. And we're going to leave it in there. And that Rat Pack is going to exist for the rest of this internet's at least this payment of this website.
Right on. Cool.
Now, listen, I'm going to wind this down and I'm going to say it's been a pleasure to have you on the show, Dwayne. And I'd love to have you again as a guest or commentary about anything Lee Marvin or whatever. If you have another book coming out, man, you have a welcome position here.
Coolness. I'm working on a few things, actually. And when they come to fruition, I will certainly let you know about it.
It'd be my honor to have you back on the show, and I'm sure our guests would be stoked to have you. Cool. And with that said, I want you to go out and check out softrep.com and check out our book-club, okay, and the merch store. Keep Absolutely. Supporting us, and thank you so much to my guest, Dwayne, and to his significant other, Barbara. Okay, you guys, thanks so much. This is Rad saying peace.
You've been listening to Soft Rep Radio.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.